Hi, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine. Joining us today is Dr. Nathan Ledebor from the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's going to talk with us about susceptibility testing with the MultiTOF platform. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you to everyone who's listening to the podcast. For the purpose of this podcast, I want to focus on whether or not susceptibility testing can be performed using the MultiTOF. Susceptibility testing has been one of the biggest challenges that labs are faced with since implementation of MultiTOF. MultiTOF has been demonstrated time and time again to perform excellently for identification of bacteria, yeast, mycobacteria, as well as the filamentous fungi. However, labs are still left with standard phenotypic methods in order to perform susceptibility testing at a significant delay in turnaround time compared to the identification that's provided with MultiTOF. A number of different research groups have looked at the question of whether susceptibility testing can be performed using MultiTOF and have observed varying levels of success. One of the earliest questions around susceptibility testing with MultiTOF was whether or not the MALDI could distinguish methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus from methicillin-susceptible Staphylococcus aureus. With a number of initial manuscripts describing that, in fact, yes, MRSA can be distinguished from MSSA depending upon the presence or absence of certain peaks. More recently, a study published by Zasbos and colleagues in the Journal of Infection has subsequently brought new information to this question, calling into question whether or not susceptibility testing can be performed or cannot be performed using the MultiTOF. In the first section of their study, this research group looked at a number of previous publications looking at the presence or absence of peaks associated with the presence or absence of MRSA in a culture. For example, in one study that looked at a total of 14 different strains, they looked for the presence of several peaks to indicate the presence of MRSA, and then looked for the presence of several additional peaks for the presence of MSSA, and were unable to find any MRSAs that were falsely identified as MSSAs. A subsequent study using a much larger N of 76 specimens, again using the presence of peaks associated with MRSA to distinguish MRSA, and the presence of peaks associated with MSSA to identify MSSA, they found 7 out of a total of 43 MRSA isolates to be falsely identified. And in a final study that they reviewed, they looked at a total of 99 samples, again looking for the presence or absence of peaks, and found a 50% misidentification rate of MRSA. The second component of the Zasbos study looked at two different organisms with isogenic backgrounds in order to determine whether or not there were peaks specifically associated with MRSA or peaks specifically associated with MSSA. Now, strains with isogenic backgrounds are basically strains that are identical minus the presence of the MEC-A cassette or the SCC-MEC cassette. And when they performed this study using an isogenic strain, they found that there were no differences in the presence or absence of peaks specifically associated with MRSA or specifically associated with MSSA. So at least for the moment, this study would seem to suggest that simply identifying peaks that may be associated with MRSA and separated from MSSA will not allow us to distinguish between MRSA and MSSA. However, several other groups are looking at alternate methods that may be applied to these particular strains that we'll talk about in just a moment. The second method that was described for looking for resistance in bacteria using the MultiTOF was a beta-lactamase assay that could be used to detect the presence or absence of beta-lactamases in gram-negative organisms. originally described by Sparbier and colleagues in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology. This method allows bacteria to be suspended in broth with antibiotic added and incubated for a very brief period of time, about 3 hours at 35 degrees with agitation. The bacteria are then spun down, the supernatant is removed, and the supernatant, rather than the bacteria, is analyzed using the MALDI-TOF. And in this particular case, the MALDI-TOF isn't looking for the presence or absence of a mechanism of resistance. It's looking for the presence or absence of hydrolyzed antibiotic. So it's measuring the change in molecular weight of antibiotic that's been hydrolyzed by a beta-lactamase enzyme. In the study by Sparbier and subsequently published by several additional groups, they looked at drugs like ampicillin, various cephalosporins, as well as the carbapenems, and the applicability of this method to each of these different compounds. And what they find when they analyze the supernatant containing both the native and hydrolyzed antibiotic, there are significant differences in the peaks that are either present or absent in native drug compared to hydrolyzed antibiotic. Now, the limitation of this method is that it will only work when you have an active enzyme that's hydrolyzing or modifying that antibiotic, changing the molecular weight of the antimicrobial molecule or of the antibiotic molecule. It cannot be applied to mechanistic changes like MRSA or changes with point mutations like quinolone resistance or other antibiotic resistance mechanisms that utilize a change in mechanism. It actually needs to alter the chemical structure of the antibiotic itself. And while this method initially showed very, very promising, the limitation of only being able to look when an antibiotic is damaged is somewhat limiting in terms of the broader applicability of this method to clinical laboratories. More recently, several groups have described alternative phenotypic testing using the MALDI-TOF. Again, in a study published by Sparbier in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology, they looked at the ability to use a stable isotope label onto an antibiotic and measure the accumulation of resistant organisms. So the way this method works is you grow organism both in the presence and in the absence of antibiotic, and you add a labeled amino acid into the mix, which is then incorporated into the bacterial proteome as the organism grows and gathers those amino acids. Now, in the absence of antibiotic or an inhibitor to growth, the organism will grow as normal, and accumulation of the label can be detected using the MALDI-TOF. When antibiotic is added, we then look for accumulation of that labeled amino acid in the presence of the antibiotic to indicate the presence of resistance or the ability of the organism to grow in the presence of that antibiotic. We can then run a third well to serve as a control where we don't add that labeled amino acid. We simply run the organism growing in a broth medium in order to determine that there is no labeled amino acid and thus we can't detect anything. Now, the advantage of this particular method is that it can be done relatively rapidly in a period of less than 3 hours for gram negatives and less than 5 hours for gram positives, and can be done somewhat similar to the standard microbroth dilution that clinical laboratories routinely use today. The downside of this method is that it remains very, very manual to perform, and unfortunately has not yet been automated in terms of developing a commercial product. The second limitation of this method is that it requires that stable isotope labeled amino acid in order for the method to work And frequently laboratories, when they hear labeled isotopes, they're concerned about radiation. And although that's not a concern in this particular case, the requirement of having labeled amino acid in every well can be time-consuming and can be problematic for laboratories. So a third method that was developed and described by Lang and colleagues in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology and subsequently been evaluated in our laboratory actually uses very, very similar principles to the labeled amino acid method. In this particular case, we grow organism both in the presence and in the absence of antibiotic, and we use the MALDI-TOF basically as a measure of growth. We use it to measure accumulation of biomass or accumulation of proteins in the broth that's being tested. So the way the method is performed is colonies are selected from a plate and they're inoculated into a broth both in the presence and in the absence of antibiotic. And they're incubated at 35 degrees for approximately 3 to 5 hours. Again, depending on whether you're dealing with a gram-negative organism or a gram-positive organism, incubating those gram-positive organisms just a bit longer. Once the incubation has been completed, the bacteria are lysed, the total protein is spotted onto the MALDI target plate, and acquisition of a profile spectra is acquired using the MALDI-TOF mass spectrometer. If growth can be detected, you'll see multiple different bands appear, indicating that the bacteria has multiplied and has grown in the control. When we add antibiotic, we then look for whether similar growth has accumulated, indicating potential for resistance, as compared to if the organism is susceptible. This will be indicated by the lack of growth or the lack of detectable biomass or protein mass. This particular technique has been applied to Klebsiella and pneumoniae species. It's been applied to Streptococcus pneumoniae species, as well as to E. coli, and has been found to be very, very accurate compared to routine susceptibility testing performed using phenotypic methods. Many additional studies will be required to evaluate whether these techniques can be broadly applicable to organisms encountered on a daily basis in the clinical laboratory. But at least for the moment, studies would suggest that very, very early, we may be able to significantly reduce the turnaround time of susceptibility testing using MALDI-TOF as a measure of bacterial growth. Again, further work still needs to be done to evaluate the broad applicability. But at least early on, we see very promising data with these types of techniques. So the conclusion is, for detection of specific peaks associated with MRSA and MSSA, this remains very controversial and may not be possible, at least based upon currently available data. Detection of beta-lactamase resistance is limited to many gram-negative organisms, where beta-lactamase resistance tends to be more predominant as compared to gram-positive organisms. And there are a number of different novel methods that are currently in development that may offer the potential to use the MALDI as a measure of phenotypic resistance or phenotypic susceptibility, using the MALDI and its ability to measure accumulated bacterial, yeast, or fungal growth. One of the other significant benefits of all of these methods is that they can be used regardless of the manufacturer of the instrument system. Thank you again for tuning in to the ASCP podcast series.